This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Ukraine crisis, Middle East crisis. Together, they tell a story that we begin with of an Israeli citizen, a Holocaust survivor named Fania Bass. Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, my colleague of many years, is here to tell a story that is enlivening, because these are the good guys before we get to the bad guys. Malcolm, who is Fania Bass and what has happened?
Well, first of all, good evening. And we have really remarkable stories. I met a plane load of people, as I told you, coming from the Ukraine. And each one is a remarkable story. An elderly woman, probably in her mid-80s, who said to me as she held my hand, "This is the second time I had to go through this," meaning she was there in the Holocaust as well. And each story is unique, and mostly the fact that you have no males, because people, men between 18 and 60 can't leave, and no suitcases. Two of the people who arrived were Ukrainian refugees, Lasha Orshoka and Alona Chugai, C-H-U-G-A-I. And they both came to Israel with Sharon Bass, who's the granddaughter of Fania Bass, who was a Jewish girl who was hidden from the Nazis by Maria Blichik in Ukraine. Maria was the grandmother of Orshoka and Chugai. And Sharon Bass found out, had kept in touch with them, with the grandmother, the mother, and the granddaughters over the years, in expressing appreciation and helping them, and found out about their plight, that they were in a very desperate situation. And she went and helped arrange their exit and brought them to her home in Israel now. It was a very moving story. I witnessed the pictures of it.
So the Holocaust survivor who was helped by this family has now helped the family. What is 8 decades, Malcolm? I mean, it's astonishing. So let's get to the bad guys, because there's more work to be done. Iran now, the estimate of how much uranium they need to build a bomb, and the Iran deal, is it still in train, Malcolm? How much uranium? How long will it take them?
So I have spoken to people who are experts, and we've had them over the years come onto the show and gave us estimates all along about how long it would take, how much uranium they have. Clearly, they have been able to enrich at a far greater level and greater speed than we had anticipated. We now know from assessments of the IAEA's March 3rd report on the safeguards that they have enough enriched uranium to reduce weapon-grade uranium for two nuclear weapons in 2 to 3 weeks after breakout commences, and then produce the additional quantities by the end of the month, and by a fourth in less than 4 months. So we're talking about them being so advanced in the capacity, and that they have the facilities still intact. They were not dismantled, as we were told. They were not removed from the cycle, and they're not being asked, according to the reports, to dismantle the advanced centrifuges, but to disable, just to put them in storage, and then to ship enriched uranium to Russia, which can quickly return it. And Russia, with whom we are fighting on all counts, now we're going to see how we can enrich them, both by paying them to take the enriched uranium, and because of the waivers that they're talking about, which we'll discuss, they will be able to ship oil and break the sanctions via Iran. And there are interesting revelations that came out just today.
This is the Iran deal, still under negotiation by the Biden administration through surrogates at Vienna over the JCPOA. One more detail, Malcolm. The IRGC is a terrorist organization, mass murdering organization. What is contemplated?
So the reports are, and the demand that being made by the Iranians is, that the IRGC be removed from the overseas terrorism list, which restricts them and imposes sanctions on them, which are certainly well earned. And they're talking about now removing those restrictions and against certain individuals, both in the IRGC and in the Supreme Leader's house. And in return, supposedly, there's a promise from the IRGC, which is certainly not credible that they would restrict themselves in terms of some of their regional activities. And it would be a public commitment from Iran to, I think they called it de-escalation in the region. And I mean, to accept Iran's word at this, knowing that all of this time they have been engaged in activities that undermine the very essence of the agreements that they've reached. I also learned, and this is in sources in Tehran have been discussing, and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokesman talked about that additional provisions are being included in the text of the JCPOA, that all projects and areas of activity envisaged in the deal, including cooperation with Iran at the Bushehr nuclear reactor, are protected from any negative effects of EU or US sanctions against Iran. This is a blank check to them. And Lavrov has said something similar in his meeting with the Iranian foreign minister, Abdullahian, who is in Moscow. And they're saying they're favoring the immediate resumption of talks, and it's the US that's hampering the talks, and Russia is not in responsible for any of the obstacles, and that they are working together. They talked about all sorts of bilateral arrangements as well that they would cover them in this time. But it's quite remarkable that you know, it's so hard to tell people what is the legitimacy of this deal when virtually every aspect of it spells out a further disadvantage to the West and to the United States. And we're seeing that opposition being expressed when Democratic members of the Senate weigh in against the deal. Including 12 Democrats wrote one letter, another, a large group of members, bipartisan members, wrote another, expressing their concern about what the nature of the deal is, and all the reports that are coming out underscore that, and especially at a time when you have the head of the Central Command saying Iran now has about 3,000 ballistic missiles, some of them capable of hitting Tel Aviv, and that they have invested heavily in their ballistic missile program, which is a violation of the UN sanctions, not just the JCPOA. So we're seeing such all the signs that are pointing to what some have called a sellout, some have called just a badly negotiated deal, that this is not stronger and longer, it's weaker and shorter. And we see the reaction then in the moderate Arab states, which are saying clearly that they are afraid that the United States see this agreement with Iran as bowing to them and allowing them to get stronger in ways that threatens them. And that's particularly true of the Gulf countries. And they will increase their efforts to achieve nuclear weapons, plus the fact that they stand to get tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars as a result of it.
Malcolm, we need good news. February, a drone strike. Tell me about it. Who struck what?
Well, in this case, Israel hit a very important base in Iran, where there were supposedly Iranian drones. It was the main factory for Iranian drones. They used six quadcopter drones that hit the factory in Karmanasha. In mid-February, and the facility, it seems, in the facility, they destroyed dozens. In fact, others have told me hundreds of these drones.
So the Israeli drone struck the Iran drone factory. Is that correct? And we have,
right.
we have that reported now. It happened in February.
It happened mid-February, right? Iran gives this drone technology to forces of theirs in Iraq and in Syria. And they use those against American personnel. You know, we've seen it in Iraq. And then we saw the attack on Erbil by Iranian missiles, claiming that they were aiming it at an Israeli training installation, which there is none, and everybody acknowledges that there was none. Some believe that it was aimed at the American consulate in Erbil. The Kurdistan government said that there are no Israeli bases there, and it was and they summoned the consul general to Erbil to protest the attack by Iran. The IRGC claimed responsibility for firing a dozen missiles that hit targets on the outskirts of Erbil, which is in Kurdistan. And and they made then up the story about there being a, you know, a training facility or something in Iraqi Kurdistan. So U.S. has denied it as well. Everybody knows that it's just simply not true. But you see how Iran is stoking the fires, is provocating in all this time.
Malcolm, we need more good news. I need to end with good news here, Malcolm. Tell me about the flights into the Abraham Accords. You have 20 seconds.
Well, I have to tell you that when I was in Israel this week, I saw delegations, 50 businessmen from Iran, from Morocco, many coming from UAE, and now flights, direct flights to Sharm el-Sheikh from Tel Aviv to Egypt's great vacation city, as well as UAE flights and Moroccan flights, all direct flights. They're going to be expanding radically in the next few weeks, and as is the cooperation from the Abraham Accords.
Malcolm Hoenlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, a drone strike on a drone factory, the modern age, robots versus robots. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.